Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from barely the capital of free Washington, Spokane Valley. Once again, brought to you by the committee to elect Matt Shea, Republican, and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story in the news. Behind the news, it's not about right or left, it's about right and wrong, and us doing the hard work to implement freedom. Because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ, and we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as Exodus 15:3 says, the Lord is a warrior, the Lord is his name, are we warriors. One of the parts of being a warrior is actually giving thanks, humility. And this week of Thanksgiving, I just want to bring up to you a tradition we do in our family, and maybe see if you do it in your family as well. And if you don't, maybe consider it. We actually will sit at the table, and once we have all of the meal served, we'll go around the table, and everyone will give thanks verbally for how the Lord has blessed them in the last year. And it's interesting because a lot of times, and this year's been tough on a lot of people. It really has. And we forget that trials are also a blessing, that blessings and trials go together, that that's how we grow, it's how we move forward. I was listening to a sermon from our pastor over the weekend. It was really, really good. You know, he's talking about the parable of the sower and planting a seed in the ground. And then you fertilize it with manure. Well, nobody likes the manure in their life, right? But it does help you grow. It does help you grow. And two part of growing plants is that you need to harden them against the elements outside. And again, not comfortable for the plant, but it makes them grow strong and grow well. So this week, no matter what's been happening to you or with you this year, no matter how dark or gloomy it's become or how stressful it's become, just stop on that day of Thanksgiving. Try not to add a bunch of stuff to it, but focus on the purpose of the day to give thanks. As George Washington said, it is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey his will, to be grateful for his benefits, and humbly to implore his protection and his favors. With gratitude to God for the gift of liberty and his manifold provisions, have a blessed Thanksgiving. And we should have a blessed Thanksgiving. We still live in America. For those of you that are out there that are veterans, we're still upright living in America. We're home for Thanksgiving. We're having more food than we can eat. And we have our friends and family and those that love us around us. We truly are blessed here in this country. And I think it's good. It's good to remember that. That brings us to your daily intelligence briefing on the international front. In the Middle East war, well, interestingly, it's been kind of quiet after this Iranian leadership shakeup with the Ayatollah. Also, one of the deputy commanders was lost in the battle in southeast Syria. And that lead general Soleimani actually took over in this final battle to root out ISIS. Well, they finally did do that. And there's been celebrations in Tehran over the defeat of ISIS. But Putin stepped immediately in and is beginning to shape post-war Syria. And interestingly as well, after the Lebanese prime minister escaped out of Lebanon to Saudi Arabia and resigned, the Lebanon army chief has asked for troops to be ready or for readiness on the Israel border. Now, remember, we talked about the fact that the Saudi leadership shakeup, very clear what's happening there. They're moving away from Wahhabi Islam toward a lesser form of Sunni Islam, as far as radical. Now, I don't want to make it sound like it's not radical. I want to be put this all in context. But the Wahhabi Islamists in Saudi Arabia are the ones that were put under house arrest, at least the leading ones. So right now, you have a potential war brewing between Saudi Arabia and Iran, as we have been talking about the last couple of weeks, with the Houthi rebels in Yemen launching a missile toward Riyadh that was taken down. And now the Lebanese, who are typically proxies of the Iranians, saying that they're going to make troops ready on the Israel border. Now, they don't talk about Hezbollah, which is an Iranian proxy terrorist organization as well, on the Israel border. But it looks like things are being put in place for a war to begin there at any time. And this is being reported actually by the Jerusalem Post. So I look at something like that, combined in context with everything else, and it seems like Syria, at least that conflict may be winding down, but a far, far greater conflict may be winding up in the Middle East. Also on the international front, this is really strange, okay? Russia. A mysterious 986 times higher level of radiation coming from Russia into Europe. And the Russians are like, oh, we don't know what happened. There's nothing going on here. 986 times higher radioactivity levels, okay? I mean, so this isn't like a small leak. There's a lot of rumor out there that there may have been a nuclear accident again in Russia. Remember Chernobyl? It happened, and they covered it up. We're going to keep our eyes on this, but something is not – they're not saying something. And obviously the Russians are trying to keep it under wraps, but something clearly happened. And the alarm bells are going off in Europe right now. Boy, it's like it's the Cold War again almost, huh? Very strange. Also on the international front, North Korea, some predictions that they're going to do multiple missile tests by the end of the year. Also an article out there about the true strength of the North Korean artillery. Now, we've talked a little bit about this, and there's a lot of people out there that say that the North Koreans would be able to strike Seoul in probably a greater strength than they really could. Now, it's not to say they couldn't. They have hardened artillery bunkers in the side of a mountain. They've been building this stuff since the 1950s. Well, it's 70 years. They've had to harden these structures. They have some artillery, though, too, that's out in the open. But you have to understand when you analyze artillery pieces, especially that come from a communist background. When we were studying the Russians, and especially in Afghanistan, what we learned was at any given time, about a third of their machines were down. Okay, now I use the word machine, but I'm talking everything from tanks to cargo trucks to other machinery, okay? A third of it was down at any given time. A third of their troops were typically not able to fight at any given time from disease or what have you. Now, looking at North Korea and in hearing some of the reports coming from defectors that have just come out of North Korea, one in particular telling about the horrific treatment of the women in the North Korean military. systemic rape, just horrifically unclean conditions, to the point that it put their bodies in such stress that North Korean women did not have their normal menstrual cycles. I mean, this is what's coming out in these reports. I mean, just horrible, just absolutely horrible. So taking that into account, though, we know that the physical treatment of their soldiers is not like it is here in the United States, and we can't project how we do things onto them. So it's very likely they would also have a problem fielding all of their soldiers at one time. Also, it's very likely they would not be fielding all of their artillery at one time, because some of it is going to be down for maintenance, broken, whatever. So there's an article, I posted it up on Facebook, and take a look at it because it goes through some of the kind of realities if there is a conflict over there about what they could really do to Seoul, South Korea. It kind of really puts things back into a good perspective, a realistic perspective. But the bottom line is they're still going to continue to test missiles and test the resolve of the United States of America. But now they know that Trump isn't bluffing. They are probably going to just do the tests they have out into the open ocean. Also on the international front, Venezuela, we've been talking about this 2,400% inflation, but now Venezuela has officially defaulted. Okay, now that isn't by Venezuelan standards. Okay, that is by S&P. That's by another credit reporting bureau as far as country credit that analyzes the credit worthiness of a nation. So the Venezuelan default is official. It has happened. Okay. Now, there were some people on social media that were trying to say that this was not the result of socialist policies, which is just laughable. Centralized control over the economy, cracking down on entrepreneurs, squandering the oil wealth that they have, and not allowing innovation in the oil industry, among many other things, is the proximate cause, is the actual cause of that collapse. And that is exactly what the socialists and the communists advocate, is centralization of control and a complete, complete destruction of the entrepreneurs. Back in Russia, they call them the kulaks, the kulaki. They said, these are the productive people. They're stealing from everybody else. We're going to take everything they have. Literally, the farm implements, everything that they had to produce wealth, the means of production, capital, they would take. Now, they say, oh, you know, this, everybody owns it now. Well, not really. That's never how a government truly works. It was an oligarchy. A small group of people controlled and owned everything. But really, Venezuela is the modern picture of failed socialism. And if we continue to adopt similar policies here in the United States, it's going to be a similar result. It just is. And I think it's very important that we acknowledge that, and that we, you know, we don't want to go down that road. Also on the national front, scientists plan to map a safety net for planet Earth. What is this? This is very clearly the attempt at a Yellowstone to Yukon cordoning of land so you can't use it. And here I want to quote directly from them. This is unbelievable to me. Okay? I want to paint this picture for you, okay? These people are trying to come across as reasoned. They're trying to come across as really we are for protecting the environment. Okay? They want to ban, close down, restrict access to 50% of planet Earth. You heard me right when I said that. 50% of planet Earth. I want to quote the article that I'm reading from right now. Manga Bay is the environmentalist. This is from their website. Okay. Quote, the mapping effort to be led by Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit research organization Resolve Together with Globaia, an NGO based in Quebec, Canada, and Brazil's Universidade Federal de Vicosa aims to identify the most critical terrestrial regions to protect as we work toward the goal of conserving 50% of the world's land area, end quote. What does that mean, folks? Guess what? We are in one of those critical terrestrial regions. And I tell you what, if you go into Yellowstone now and you actually open your eyes and look, you will see all over Yellowstone UN signs, markers, etc. This is real. It's happening. And they're very plain about it. They want to lock up so much land. Remember Yellowstone to Yukon? They want to lock up so much land that it'll be us looking out from the city at the grizzly bears. We're going to be the ones in the zoo. So get involved. We can't let this, we just can't let this continue. Because what that does is it takes away our ability to produce wealth, which means it takes away our ability to fight tyranny. That's the insidious nature of this. Also on the national front, FBI Fields report documenting the collusion. Okay, now, Al-Qaeda slash ISIS. I'm going to go with Al-Qaeda, okay? Al-Qaeda collusion with Antifa in Germany that occurred. Okay, I want you to understand something. These leftists are very interconnected. You have Antifa, you have Indivisible, you have George Soros, you have the Democrat Party, all interconnected with the same or similar people. So you'll have a member, for example, of Antifa Northern Seattle that becomes a campaign manager of a state representative candidate or state Senate candidate, and it doesn't make it into the campaign. Why? It should. We need to start documenting this stuff. These people are intentionally colluding with Al-Qaeda, members of Antifa. But more than that, okay, just take that off the table for a second. These people want to rewrite the Constitution of the United States of America. They've been very outspoken about it. You can take a look at some of their organizations, black and white. And don't be fooled that these organizations are all separate. If you look at who the leaders are, a lot of the leaders are the same people, or they're one degree connected to the other organization through marriage, friendship, prior working relationships. It's very simple to document this stuff. We need to get it out there. And I'm going to talk about a couple points on that here in a second. So when you see the Clinton collusion with the Russians and the Uranium One scandal, now you understand this idea of projection. These people will always lie. They will double down on their lie, and then they will project onto you how they really are themselves. So if you have a liberal say, for example, you must be a hater of some kind, whatever, they probably are struggling with that themselves. If you hear a liberal say, you must be colluding with the Russians, well, actually, it was probably you that was doing it. If you hear a liberal say, you must be the one that is sexually assaulting women, it is probably them that's doing it. In fact, you can look at, but we've forgotten about Hollywood. I mean, look at the scandal in Hollywood just got subsumed by the allegations of sexual assault and misconduct by the left everywhere. It's unreal. It's also interesting that the left does have a propensity for violence. And we've seen that with Antifa. That's been very well documented in Facebook, posted them and screenshotted, etc. But there, you know, there's these kind of mysteries that occur that kind of raise your eyebrows, okay? And I'm gonna talk about one of those mysteries right now. Wealthy Democrat mega donors coming from WorldNet Daily, who co-founded the Ready for Hillary PAC. He was also a member of the George Soros-founded Democracy Alliance. 46-year-old trial lawyer Stephen Mostyn was found dead of an apparent gunshot wound after a, quote, sudden onset and battle with a mental health issue, end quote. So a Hillary mega donor found dead. All right. Also on the national front, Slaughterbots. Now, I don't know if you guys have seen this video. Just go online, go to start page, type in Slaughterbots, Slaughterbots. Take a look at the video about how technology now is out there to create swarms of killer robots that can use facial recognition before killing people. It is an absolutely stunning, stunning video. Not only that, if that is connected with the technology through social media to identify people by their political views, the implication of this technology is profound. So check it out. Again, it's a video called Slaughterbots, and Professor Stuart Russell, I think he's from Berkeley, is the one that helped bring part of this forward. And anyway, just something we need to say, okay, that is on the horizon. We need to deal with it now. How are we going to protect the rights of life, liberty, property, and the ability to defend the same with people? Just fascinating stuff. Fascinating. All right. Also on the national front. Looks like the holiday time is the time for hacks, or at least hacks to be revealed anyway. Apparently, California Transit was hacked. Looks like, looks like, what, 30 million files, according to Drudge. Hackers took over the computers, demanded ransom, and those 30 million files were erased. And then just on the heels of that today, Uber was exposed for concealing 57 million records being hacked. And apparently they paid money to the hackers for them to erase the stolen data. $100,000 for those hackers to keep quiet after they stole 57 million customer and driver files. So remember, we talked about this a couple years ago, where eventually this is going to become a national security issue, and something is going to be done as far as cybersecurity is concerned on a national scale. It's already kind of being done, but they're going to trot something out publicly in regards to this. And we have to make sure that this isn't something that is going to invade our privacy, allow warrantless surveillance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Even though they're already doing some warrantless surveillance, we can't allow these things to be used as an excuse to continue the practices. On the regional front, social justice warriors. I'm going to do some training here in the next couple months on how to fight social justice warriors. These are the socialists. These are the communists. How to fight back. How to identify what they're doing up front and to fight back against it. And if you start seeing people do this, okay, some of these things I'm going to talk about, you know they are not conservatives and constitutionally minded. You know that they have probably little Christian worldview. And it's good to identify this and then know how to fight back. And we're starting to see this among people who would call themselves maybe even Republican, let alone Democrat. Three things you can always count on. Three principles that are across the board. I've seen this for 8 years. Vox Day actually does a great job laying this out in a book that I think it's downloadable online for free. And if you get a chance, go take a look at it. But Vox Day, it's called SJWs, or Social Justice Warriors, Always Lie, Taking Down the Thought Police. It was written back in 2015, but it's very prescient today. Number one principle, social justice warriors always lie. Number two, they double down on their lie. Number three, they always project. In other words, they project onto you how they really are themselves. So we summed it up that way. I'm going to be doing some training on how to spot this. But if you see people who, you know, consistently lie, they conceal the facts. The facts are very clear. They lose, millions of dollars. They are caught publicly lying all the time. Here's the thing. Don't cover for these people. Call them out. Because they always lie. They always double down. They always project. Because they're part of the problem in America. They are the socialists in America, whether they know it or not. And over the weekend, some of these social justice warriors, the Empire Strikes Back, after a series of scandals and a series of over 250 complaints against the local, state, and individual members of the Democrat Party across Washington, they decided they were going to strike back and file a bunch of complaints against Republicans. Some are very dubious, okay? But I want to say a couple things. In this retaliation for them being called out. And by the way, the Republican Party didn't file any of this stuff. An independent citizen did, okay? But as part of this retaliation, there's something you all need to know. There was a statement put out by Mark Schessler and Dan Christensen. These are the leaders of the Senate and the House, respectively. And they put this statement out regarding the Washington Democrats filing all of these complaints against Republicans. Quote, "The state Democrat Party and Attorney General Bob Ferguson are both compromised and conflicted in bringing campaign finance lawsuits for profit and partisan advantage." I want to skip down. "Previous complaints against Republican members were drafted by an attorney who only months ago worked for Bob Ferguson at taxpayers' expense. While working for the taxpayers, Smith," this is the attorney, "conspired with Democrats to start a private law firm that sues only Republicans." And what they don't say in there is for attorney's fees and fines, okay? They didn't say that. But it continues. "He," this is Smith, "deliberately withheld taking action as an assistant attorney general so he could personally profit by bringing lawsuits the moment he left the AG's office. This attorney is now seeking to profit from his former position and benefit the political fortunes of his former boss," referring to Bob Ferguson. "His dubious actions are currently the subject of a lawsuit in Thurston County." Now, there's more on this, but you get the idea. This guy worked for the attorney general's office, waits to file complaints instead of doing his job working for the attorney general's office in the PDC division, leaves, and then decides to file because he can make money. Unbelievable. And we're going to continue to follow that story because this is a huge deal in Washington State, the politicization of the PDC, the Public Disclosure Commission. And the Public Disclosure Commission is out there to stop corruption and to ensure transparency. Also on the local front, really quick, some good news on the local front. The Planned Parenthood curriculum being considered by Spokane Public Schools was rejected. And good thing it was. I want to highlight a couple things. This is coming from Mosaic. It did a great job doing a white paper on this. This was for 6th through 9th grade, okay? Some of it. But it essentially discouraged only non-consensual and unprotected sex as part of this curriculum. So they were teaching 6th through 9th graders about something they probably shouldn't be promoting. But again, it was Planned Parenthood. So could there be a connection between the money that Planned Parenthood makes and the curriculum they're putting out there? That's what the implication is anyway. Spokane Public Schools was going to pay $120,000 for this curriculum for the first 2 years, but it has been rejected. So a great win because a lot of people got involved. A lot of people spoke out and they were listened to. We can't let our guard down. We always have to be vigilant. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody out there that has been praying for us. It's been watching the show on YouTube. We're there now, even though it's just watching a picture while the audio plays. But hey, it's on YouTube now. Thank you to everybody that has also been going to iTunes and Podbean. And if you have friends and family members and maybe they can't catch the show, they can always listen to it during drive time by going to iTunes or Podbean and listening to the podcast. And if you want to contribute to keep us on the air, go to VoteShea.com and make sure you go to the Facebook/Patriot Radio US page and like it and share it with your friends and family, especially over the holiday weekend. You'll have an opportunity to talk about these things that we talk about on Patriot Radio all the time. Well, it's my pleasure to introduce Harriet Hageman, managing partner at Hageman Law, licensed to practice in Wyoming, Nebraska, and Colorado, but just well known throughout the West as a fighter for property rights. Grew up on a ranch near Fort Laramie, Wyoming, and graduated from the University of Wyoming and then the University of Wyoming College of Law. Thank you very much for being on Patriot Radio today. Really appreciate all the work you're doing in the fight for freedom and liberty.
Well, thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be here. We've been trying to get this organized for a while.
We have indeed. So I just want to start, if you could, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and how you came to be involved, especially in the property rights battle in the Western United States.
Well, as you indicated, I came from a ranch. I grew up on a ranch near Fort Laramie, Wyoming, and I went to law school. And starting in 1997, I began working on a lawsuit called Nebraska versus Wyoming and getting my an original jurisdiction action related to the North Platte River and the water. As soon as that lawsuit was resolved in the year 2000, I went back into private practice and began my own law firm. At the time, it was Hageman and Brighton. It's now Hageman Law. Kara Brighton was appointed to the Public Service Commission here in the state of Wyoming. But we dedicated our firm, starting in 2000, to water and natural resource issues. And obviously, with my background and my political bent, I felt very strongly about protecting private property rights. Having grown up on a ranch and seeing the importance of private property, the importance of that from the standpoint of the economy of your local communities and from the standpoint of the, you know, our freedoms and liberties associated with that, it was obviously something that was very near and dear to my heart. So over the years, I've worked on a variety of issues, doing a lot or dealing a lot with federal agencies, fighting with the EPA, fighting with the Corps of Engineers, Fish and Wildlife Service, Forest Service, BLM, those types of organizations, those agencies that have been, you know, especially in the more recent memory, been pretty focused on enacting and implementing an agenda out of Washington, D.C. that is not necessarily very positive or a very not very good steps, if you will, for those of us in the Western United States. So really what I've been focusing my practice on is making sure that we are protecting our constitutional rights and liberties, and you do that through the kind of work that I've been taking, again, primarily against these federal agencies.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the demonization of ranchers in the Western United States and this idea that is really driving behind it, whether you're talking the BLM or the Forest Service or any of these agencies, this idea that we need to lock land up It needs to be a policy of non-use, not wise use. First of all, where do you think that is coming from? And number two, how have you seen ranchers demonized in your own practice and in many of the stories you probably have heard as you have interviewed people and talked to people throughout the West?
You know, I think a lot of it comes from ignorance and lack of education. I think that anymore there is a lot of demonization of many industries that are resource-based. There is has been a concerted effort by certain organizations for literally decades to teach young people about that resource management and use is evil, that it is that it harms the environment, that private property rights harm the environment, that ranchers and farmers are greedy, that they only care about the bottom line and they don't care about maintaining the range or watersheds or the water resources, that there's been this concept that we have to keep the West wild, if you will. I think one of the battles that we fight pretty much day in and day out are these organizations, a lot of whom are on the coast, that their intent is to lock up these lands. They don't like the fact that there are large, that property is privately owned. They look at Wyoming, they look at Colorado, they look at Montana, they look at Idaho, and they don't believe that those are areas or states or regions that should have farmers and ranchers. And I think that they've educated people for decades, as I said now, along that line of indoctrination. I think it comes just really fundamentally from what we go back to and we fight all the time, what you see on the national stage. I mean, we're seeing socialism and communism collapse in real time with what is going on in Venezuela. Yet you go to some of our college campuses and people will say, oh, no, that's a good form of government. It's never been a good form of government. Socialism or communism, they've never ended well. Yet, I think that that's the way people look at the way that, you know, they kind of strive for that, kind of implementing that in the United States. One of the ways that you do that is you take away private property rights. So, again, there are a variety of organizations that have spent, that their entire mission statement really is to prevent the use of private property, to prevent the ownership of private property. In terms of what I've seen is that I think that there's also this view among many right now that I don't understand, that government, this nebulous concept of government, can always do things better, even though we see that it fails over and over and over again. I mean, you can see how the government manages our medical facilities when you look at what's happened in some of the VA hospitals. You can look how the government has managed or handled that situation in southwestern Colorado where they contaminated the Animas River with that horrific spill that occurred a couple of years ago. But there's this idea that the government is better at managing these resources. They don't really say who the government is, but for example, I have represented farmers who moved irrigation ditches. I had a farmer up near Worland, Wyoming, who moved an irrigation ditch and reclaimed his farm, reclaimed large areas of land that had been suffering from severe erosion over the years. Came in, spent $300,000 on a project improving the farm, reducing the amount of erosion going into the Bighorn River, all kinds of things. The EPA turned around and sued him for violating the Clean Water Act, claiming that that irrigation ditch was a navigable water of the United States. We spent 5 years, and he spent $1 million on attorney's fees and expert witness fees battling that. We had a two-week trial. And in 2014, we had a two-week trial in front of a jury, federal district court. We ultimately prevailed. But that was an example of the federal government coming in and claiming, well, you didn't have a piece of paper. You had to have a 404 permit. You had to have permission from us to do work on your own private property because we're better at this than you are. And you see that. You see that kind of overreach on a variety of levels. That's one of them. I think that the EPA is an agency that has turned into an agency that's very much focused on punishment and hurting landowners, if you will. Another agency that you see attempting to take control over and dictating management on private property is the Fish and Wildlife Service. That's an agency that has come in through the introduction of the Canadian gray wolf into Wyoming and Idaho, through their the positions they're taking with sage-grouse management, through the positions that they've previously taken with the Preble's jumping mouse. I can go on and on and on. This is an agency that wants to use basically the Endangered Species Act as a form of a zoning ordinance to dictate land use, primarily, again, throughout the western United States. A mechanism that substantially or severely undermines private property rights and the value of private property. So it's just been an ongoing battle, if you will. I think it's escalated from year to year to year to year. I think the whole concept of climate change and that effort to push that narrative in our country, I think that that's just part of the same story, if you will. For some reason, there are folks out there that believe that private property is bad, government ownership is good. Private individuals and the capitalistic regime, if you will, is bad, and socialism is good. I think it's just all on a spectrum.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the fact that they try to control property rights, but they also try to in property, you know, as a tangible piece of land or mineral rights. But they also try to control water, and that's the more insidious one, because if you control water, you control people. And we've seen up here in Washington with the Hearst decision, really a smoke and mirrors game that they play with surface water and groundwater. Can you talk a little bit about the challenges you're seeing in water rights right now, especially against ranchers in the West?
Well, again, I think that probably one of the most important ones that came out of Washington, D.C. was the redefinition of the waters of the U.S. Under the Clean Water Act, the federal government or the EPA, the Corps of Engineers, really only have jurisdiction over limited waterways throughout the United States. It's the states that are responsible for managing water. And under Wyoming's constitution, for example, the water within the state of Wyoming belongs to the state of Wyoming. It does not belong to the federal government. We can talk about a navigable water of the U.S. until the cows come home. That's just a designation related to a statute. The federal government does not own that water. The state of Wyoming owns that water. The state of Colorado has some ownership. The state of Nebraska, they own that water. What the feds are doing with, again, the redefinition of a navigable water of the United States is they've essentially tried to define that resource so that it includes everything. It includes everything from drainages to roadside ditches to ripples of sand in the desert that may contain water once every 100 years to, it just goes on and on and on. What it is they're attempting to define the resource in a way that is truly and utterly absurd, but they're doing it in order to use a water quality statute, the Clean Water Act, to take jurisdiction over water quantity. So with the Waters of the U.S. rule, which fortunately the Trump administration has withdrawn, what that did is it didn't really have as much to do with water as it had to do with land. So they didn't try to define what a navigable water of the United States was, for example. They defined, well, if you're within, 300 yards or a mile or a half a mile of a navigable water of the United States, then the entire area is subject to the Clean Water Act. Well, you can understand and recognize what an astoundingly large land grab that was, and that's what it was. So if you are a farmer or a rancher, if you're within a half a mile of a waterway, you would be controlled by the Clean Water Act, even if you weren't doing anything with water. I mean, it was just really an absurd effort on the part of the EPA to define something in such a way that they took control not only of the water but the lands themselves. So, as I said earlier, it is just part of that ever-expanding effort coming out of Washington, D.C., to take more and more and more and more and more authority in the states at the expense of states' rights, individual rights, private property rights, and our civil liberties. I mean, it just really comes down to that. You have a bunch of nameless, faceless bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. that truly want to micromanage every single aspect of our lives. This is one of the ways that they do that. And it is, again, a land grab and a water grab. You're right. If they control the water, that's it. They control everything. They control development. They control all aspects of your state government.
Let's talk specifically about surface water versus groundwater. These two ideas kind of get conflated, and I think it's intentional because they try to make it seem like there may be less water in an area than there actually is, or that somehow drilling a well is almost always going to impact surface water when actually it's the exact opposite. If you could kind of describe for the listeners a little bit about how those two interplay and some of the things that you've seen in your court cases and talking to people throughout the West.
Well, groundwater and surface water are very complicated. And what you're referring to is what we refer to as conjunctive use management. And it is trying to figure out what is the relationship between groundwater and surface water and how hydrologically connected they are. That's where it becomes very, very complicated. And again, this is another area. When the new WOTUS rules came out, they actually have attempted to take jurisdiction over groundwater, which the federal government and the EPA has never had anything to do with groundwater ever. That has always been a state issue, in part because it is very complicated, and the federal government just simply does not belong in that arena. Again, the water belongs to the states and to the individuals. So what you have, and I'm not familiar with Washington water law, but I am familiar with Wyoming water law, Colorado water law, and Nebraska water law, all three of which are very different, and all three of which address that groundwater-surface water relationship differently. In Nebraska, your surface water is administered by the Department of Natural Resources, and your groundwater is administered by local what are called natural resource districts. In Wyoming, groundwater and surface water are sometimes conjunctively managed, depending upon the waterway, depending upon how deep the well is and all of those things, by the state, but they're both administered and regulated by the state engineer's office. And in Colorado, they have adopted what are called, they have a different way of addressing the relationship between surface water and groundwater. So what the concept is, and I'm not a hydrologist, but I work with quite a few hydrologists, and I work with quite a few different groundwater experts, but the concept is that when you drill a well, depending upon where it is located in proximity to a live stream, the question becomes, what kind of an impact does the pumping of that well have on the flow in that stream? The further that well is away from that stream, it's not going to have, it may have no impact, or it may have an impact 150 years from now. It all has to do with, as I said, a very complicated analysis of transmissivities and all kinds of stream depletion factors and all kinds of things. That's why it becomes so complicated so quickly when you are attempting to address the groundwater surface water relationship. It is very hard to adopt and implement a one-size-fits-all approach to the management of those resources, because every stream is going to be different, every watershed is going to be different, the depth of the wells are going to be different. Again, what you're dealing with in terms of the aquifers are going to be different. So, again, I don't know what the water laws are in Washington or what they're attempting to do in terms of trying to conjunctively manage these. But again, it's complicated, and people need to be careful about this one-size-fits-all approach, because it doesn't always work that way. There are substantial differences between Nebraska and Wyoming, even though we're neighboring states. There are substantial differences in terms of the groundwater resources available in those two states. So it's an area that, again, I believe very strongly in state management on those issues versus the federal government coming in, because I don't think the federal government should have anything to do with it. And I think that you have to be cognizant of the local situation, if you will.
I completely agree about the state management part of it. And even better, it would be even lower levels, like county levels of management in some instances. I really have seen a lot of frustration on the part of farmers and ranchers and loggers, for that matter, here in eastern Washington, North Idaho, and Northeast Oregon. What would your message be to those folks right now that may be facing government bureaucrats invading their ranch or their farm and saying, hey, you know, we want to kind of take control of everything there? And instead of acquiescing or letting some of these, you know, informal surveys occur, or some of these other intrusions, what do you think they can do to fight back, and who can they call and talk to about it?
Well, the fact is, we still have private property rights in this country. And the government does not have the right. Government agencies, government bureaucrats, government employees do not have the right to come on your property unless they have permission to do so, either permission through you or with a search warrant. And they can only get a search warrant if they can establish that there is some kind of potentially some criminal behavior that has or is going on that property. So private landowners have the right to say, no, you don't have the ability to come on to my property. Now, there are exceptions with that. And again, in the water arena, the state engineer's office has authority to go and determine whether there are, you know, somebody is stealing water. The irrigation districts have the ability to go on private property to administer water and make sure that they're delivering water to the right areas. And again, that somebody is not stealing water that does not belong to them. But I think that one of the most important lessons that people need to understand, when you receive something from a federal agency, and again, I'll use the federal government as an example. If you receive a notice of violation from the EPA saying, we believe that by moving your irrigation ditch on your property, you have violated the Clean Water Act because you did not have a 404 permit to do that. And you made these changes on November 15th, 2017, and you now are in violation of the Clean Water Act. You are subject to fines of $37,500 a day. You have 10 days to notify us whether you're going to cooperate or not. Any landowner who receives that kind of a letter almost goes into heart attack mode because they have 5 years to bring that lawsuit. So let's back that date up to 2014. So you received that letter in 2017. They've been sitting there with this for 3 years, and you're confronted with fines of $37,500 a day for that intervening three-year period that you were allegedly in violation of the Clean Water Act. Don't let them bully you into believing that you have to do what they are demanding or that they're going to fine you that amount of money. Yes, it is true under the Clean Water Act that the EPA has the ability to pursue a fine of $37,500, but number one, I've never seen them do it, and number two, I don't think you'd ever find a court that would approve it. So don't let them bully you. What I have seen with these agencies, and again, the EPA is a classic example of this, is they use that threat. They use that the fear that someone would have to browbeat our landowners into agreeing to things and doing things that they are not legally required to do, or that they're never going to face fines of that magnitude. I mean, I've seen those letters over and over again, and the EPA will come back and say, okay, well, it's really going to be a fine of a total of $3,000. They know they're not going to get that money. So I guess one of the pieces of advice I would give to everybody, if you've got an agency coming after you for something that they claim that you did wrong in violation of the law, you know, I'm going to have to toot our own horn here. You're going to have to get a hold of a land use attorney. Find a land use attorney. Find somebody who can decipher that information for you, because so much of it is written in gobbledygook. Find that attorney who can help you with that and push back. I have also found our U.S. attorneys don't like going to trial. They don't want to go to trial. These agencies want the path of least resistance. And when you push back and you fight to defend yourself, they oftentimes will say, man, I wish we wouldn't have gone after that guy. Defend yourself. Defend your rights. You do not have to capitulate to these people and these agencies. Always remember, they work for us, not the other way around.
I love that, because that is exactly how we're going to turn this around, is not to be on the defense all the time, but to go back on the offense, push back, and make sure, too, that we're calling competent people. So if you could, really quick, if people want to get a hold of you or they want to go check out some of the things that you've written, where can they go?
Well, my website is just HegemanLaw.com, www.HegemanLaw.com. You can find me. You can Google me. I am out there front and center, if you will, in terms of what my law practice is. That's my website, and I would recommend that people go to that website. You'll see some of the cases that I've handled. You'll see some of the PowerPoint presentations that I've done. I do a presentation called Regulation Without Representation, where I focus on the regulatory overreach, the federal overreach in this country. I travel around the country and give that speech. I know one from July, I believe. I need to get that updated because I've done some since. But that gives you an idea of the kind of information that I have available. You'll see different decisions issued on cases that I have handled. All of my contact information is there. So if people have questions, again, I'm not licensed out in Washington, but I'm happy to answer general questions, and I deal a lot with the federal issues. So if people want to get a hold of me, they sure can. They can sure find me on the website.
Harriet Hageman, Hageman Law, if you could, let's stay in touch. I really like all the work that you're doing. And you have so many things, especially at the federal level, that do cross over into parts of Washington. So please keep up the great work and the fight, and I'd love to have you on again.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. If you have any questions on this, go ahead and message me on Facebook. We'll get those questions to Harriet. We will also tell you at least what I know about the law here in Washington State. And primarily, what we've seen here in eastern Washington was this attempt here about a year and a half ago, maybe actually about 2 years ago now, where they came around with a survey to, and they asked for voluntary permission. This is key, voluntary permission to come onto somebody's property to catalog the and survey the indigenous plant and animal species on the property. Well, that was the first step they took down in Nevada. Where, you know, you find a yellow-petaled bladder pod that's apparently a plant. Or you find a special desert tortoise, and all of a sudden you've lost part of your property. And you didn't even need to let them on. That's the key part. So we have to be wise about this. We don't have to acquiesce. It's our property. We can protect it. And very candidly, until the swamp is drained some more, it's still the wise idea to do some of the things that Harriet was talking about, because some of these bureaucrats are still there. Trump hasn't been able to get rid of them yet. And, you know, we're going to be dealing with this for a long time. The West is not going to be turned back in the right direction overnight. It's going to take vigilance on our part, and it's going to take courage. Well, this is Matt Shea. Thank you once again for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and I really hope that you take the time to spend it with your family, discuss the issues that matter, and pray and give our good Lord Almighty, Jesus Christ, thanks for all the blessings that He has given us in this country.